Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Indie Heads podcast. This is Ethan filling in for Maddie as host because Maddie is finding a lost dog. On this week's podcast, we have
Will,
Jeremiah,
Lizzie,
and Lizzie is new to the podcast. So everyone, welcome her.
That I am. Yep.
Woohoo!
Two quick fun facts about yourself.
Two facts.
Fun facts.
Two fun facts.
No, not just any normal fact, a fun fact.
Okay, they have to be fun. Okay. I am lactose intolerant. That's a pretty fun fact about me. I throw up whenever I eat dairy. Cool. And I'm Canadian. Huh?
How do you drink all the damn coffee?
I don't drink milk in it, or I have coconut milk.
Do you have lactate pills?
Yeah, I take them once in a while, but they're just so... Like, there's such a hassle for me to buy, so I just usually just avoid dairy at all costs. Gotcha.
I am actually allergic to lactate pills, interestingly enough. Really? I almost went to the hospital because my dad gave me some of his lactate pills that he thought might be good for some stomach problems I was having. And I almost went to the hospital.
They did not help you
at all.
No. And I was actually allergic to milk till I was 8, so I feel your pain.
It's very, very stressful.
What happened when you turned 8?
I stopped being allergic.
Hallelujah.
That happens. Okay, so this week's podcast, as we've been teasing for a while, for all three of you who care, we are doing our top three albums of 2016 so far. Basically, the way we did this is we didn't want to have any overlap, and we also didn't want to talk about albums that we felt other people have talked about better, so that's probably why you won't hear any of us talk about Radiohead. Because most of us, if not all of us, loved A Moon-Shaped Pool, but...
What's a Radiohead?
That's a good question, Jerry.
It's not in any of our top three.
Yes, but that doesn't mean we didn't... Or it could be in our top three, but it was also...
But it wasn't.
It wasn't for any of us, and we also wanted to talk about different albums. So it's more three albums we really like this year and feel like talking about. So I'm going to start with talking about Mitski's Puberty 2. I really, really like this album a lot because Mitski is amazing and is an amazing songwriter, amazing lyric writer. This is such a good album. I think most of us have listened to it.
I like the line where she's like, happy came in me and then left.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good lyric.
It's a good line.
It's very poetic, I think, and very complex. It's definitely not an album you can understand on the first listen. Just musically, it's so fucking catchy in this weird kind of bizarre, like, almost poppy way, but then not at all. Like, I think the best example of this is Happy, where there's these like this drum machine that's like and these horns that are really catchy but like super unnerving at the same time. So she kind of finds a balance between like having this really interesting sound and having this pop appeal, and I think she really, really nails that. Do you guys have anything to say about this album?
It reminds me of Saint Vincent a lot. I've heard that comparison a lot too. I'm actually not a huge Saint Vincent fan, so in turn I'm not a huge fan of this album, but I definitely hear the appeal. And yeah, the lyrics, like Jeremiah was mentioning, the lyrics are the highlight of this album for me, I think. I can't, like, recall any on top of my head, but, like, there's a lot of, like, little snippets of things she says that kind of, like, caught me when I listened to it.
She just has a really interesting perspective, I think, on a lot of things. And, but I think musically, too, she has an interesting perspective, lyrically and musically. Like, it's very unique sounding. It kind of finds its roots in, like, DIY, punky, garagey sounding stuff, but it really is its own sound that that's really unique and appealing. I heard people comparing it to PJ Harvey, which I kind of agree with more than the St. Vincent one, and I definitely can see... why. And if you like PJ Harvey, definitely check this out. And if you were disappointed, like many were, I wasn't particularly disappointed by the Hope 6 Demolition Project, this is your PJ Harvey album for the year.
That album's actually pretty fucked up, though, because I'm from D.C.
Well, I am, too.
And, like, half the songs... Yeah, you're also from D.C. Half the songs are talking shit about, like, the Anacostia, like, river area, which is, like, not okay, because my brother works there, and, like, they're very beautiful people in the Anacostia River area, and they're trying really hard to make the Anacostia River nice and make it, like, not shitty, and it's just kind of rude of PJ Harvey to come in and be like, hey, you guys suck.
I completely agree with you on
Alina. Yeah, here to hear first. Fuck PJ Harvey.
I musically, I really enjoyed Hope Six Demolition Project.
Nah, fuck PJ Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, okay, you're with us or against us, Ethan?
Actually, I just interestingly enough, I just actually transcripted a documentary about cleaning the Anacostia. So I've just learned a lot about that and the efforts that are going into. Making that
Earth Conservation Corps. Woo! Go ham.
So yeah.
Did you read about the Earth Conservation Corps?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well.
I was just doing a transcription, so you know, not doing much research. You sure? You don't sound like it's it doesn't sound like it's fine. Jeremiah? Is it fine?
No.
You sure? You sure? Yeah. Okay.
All right, who's next?
Will's next.
All right. So my first album I'm going to talk about is the album Teens of Denial by the band Car Seat Headrest.
The indie gem.
He's definitely been the breakout star of 2016, similar to how Courtney Barnett was last year. And it's not really hard to see why, because, I mean, just like in every sense of the word, this kid is a star. He has it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he has the X factor.
That's a cliche, but like
he has the angst.
He has a lot of it. He has everything. I mean, he has the fantastic melodies. He has the great. I've been waiting for lyrics like this forever. You know, he's a fantastic lyricist. He just he tells these stories and these. And he kind of. I don't know. I can't explain them, but they're fantastic. And it just, like, I mean, like, they work ethic. He's put out so much music over the years. And it's all culminated in this studio original studio debut album, Teens of Denial. And like I said, it just has some of the best songwriting I've heard all year on it. Like, specifically, Drunk Drivers, Killer Whales is the best thing. It's my favorite song of the year.
The chorus is so catchy.
It's so fucking good. Just everything about it is so human. Yeah. As someone who's driven drunk in their life,
it's very vulnerable because, like, he's putting himself in a very dislikable position as saying he's drunk driving drunk. You're not supposed to like people who are driving drunk, but you still feel this amount of sympathy.
Well, it's just every song on he just asks these like questions, just like basically he's not like smarter or wiser than any of us. He just says it in a way that's interesting, like. In the opening cut, fill in the blank, like, you have no right to be depressed. You haven't tried hard enough to like it. It's kind of coming from the perspective of, like, someone that's kind of trying to cheer him up or kind of looking down on him for being depressed or whatever. Kind of. And it's just kind of a really anthemic chorus. And the anthemic... Everything on here is, like... The thing is that this is kind of the marriage of classic rock and indie rock, I feel. Like, you can play it for your dad. And he'll like it just as much as you do, I feel like.
Definitely. I definitely got, like, a sort of a classic rock vibe from it. But, like, definitely.
Like, obviously, like, the Cars, that sample, rest in peace. Right. But also, I hear Who a lot in it, like, especially on, like, 1937 State Park and Fill in the Blank.
Guys, so, but, unrelated, but I just got tickets to go see Flag tomorrow. So, gonna...
I don't give a fucking shit. Anyways, back to Cars.
I saw Car Seat Headrest at the venue I'm seeing Flag at.
Wow.
Yeah, and I haven't seen him live yet, but all the videos, like...
Great.
And that's something else you have to mention about is that he's been... All those years he was releasing, it was self-recorded.
I actually haven't listened to this album since he did his What's in My Bag. And that's largely in part due to the fact that... A, his What's in My Bag was really basic. But B, he was wearing these pants, which were the most... ugly pants I've ever seen in my life, and I was just like, I can't listen to your music anymore because you wear these pants. Which I know is like a really petty thing, but I realize that I think about it every time I I listen to his songs and I'm just like, I don't really want to listen to a dude who wears those pants.
The night he put out that video was the night I saw him.
Wow. And was he wearing those pants?
I don't remember.
I
have one more comment, not about this album, which I adore, actually. But War on Women are playing the Flag show, and we've talked to Shauna on here.
Literally, Ethan. Let me...
Just putting my plug in for our previous episode of our podcast.
That everyone shit on.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, I'm definitely having a full band helps him. Like, they're very... It's a very... he's definitely stronger for having Andrew on drums and having Ethan on guitar and bass.
I have not talked about this on the podcast, but I am part of Car Seat Heritage's band. When I saw them in DC, I was actually in the band seeing them.
You're what? No, Ethan Ives.
Damn it. You.
So anyways, yeah. No, my cover. Yeah, they're definitely a lot of chemistry, and they're definitely, the videos are proof and a great live act. And the thing is that he's an artist that's going to make a lot of music. He's already made a lot of music, and he's going to continue to make a lot of music. Some of it will be great, some of it maybe not as great, but I'm excited.
I think it'll continue. He hasn't put out a bad album, even, like, he's... I mean, I've only listened to his, like, stuff post, what's that, the big one with the...
Fantasy?
Yeah, I think I've only
Before that is rough.
I've listened to only post Twin Fantasy. Not including Twin Fantasy. Even Twin Fantasy is a little bit too lo-fi for me, which I know is heresy, but whatever.
I used to feel that way, but like after just listening to him for a long time, I got used to his sound enough to appreciate that album a lot. And that's also one thing I do want to say about one negative I have with Teens of Nile is that it doesn't really feel very cohesive. This feels like every song is fucking fantastic, but they very feel much individual songs. Like there's no sense of cohesion, no greater sense in listening to them all together. But it's something I'd like to, if we can get the cohesion of Twin Fantasy and just the songwriting and recording of Teens of Denial, then we have a classic on our hands. But as it stands, he released a fantastic album, and I'm excited to hear what he has next.
Let's move on to Jeremiah.
Okay, so, my first album is Malibu by Anderson .Paak, which is an album that I think a lot of people by now have listened to, and a lot of people by now have been like, oh shit, this is great. But yeah, it came out in January and was kind of on constant rotation all through the winter, and was really surprisingly fitting. Even though it was like really warm and like summery and beachy, you just want to surf. But it was nice because it was snowy, and I was imagining that I was in Florida, and I was having a good time. But yeah, it's pretty great. Anderson .Paak's got a great voice, great blend of funk and soul and hip hop and R&B and all the good shit. Pretty fantastic. Not much to say other than it's pretty fantastic. And Anderson .Paak is definitely blowing up. I expect to see him at the Grammys. You heard it here first. Do I have anything else to say? I don't think so. I think that's it. But yeah, good album. I saw him the other day. He's pretty cool. Plays the drums. Cool guy.
Okay.
My mom likes him.
That's always good.
That's just the mom test. Does anybody else listen to Malibu by Anderson .Paak?
I have listened to the album. It's like that's an album that's admittedly not... I haven't listened to it in a while, though. So I might give another chance for the summer.
Right.
I mean, he's... If Dre fucks with him, Dr. Dre fucks with him, I fuck with him, you know? Squad.
Yes, you and Dr. Dre and your squad.
Fair enough.
So, Lizzie, what is the first album you want to talk about?
All right, so the first album I'm going to talk about is... It's called Swooner by the Zolas. And a lot of Americans, you guys are all Americans, so it's a huge Canadian band. It's Vancouver-based, which is where I'm from, which is where I live. And mostly, I saw them last year this time. Tomorrow is Canada Day, and I saw them Canada Day last year when they were performing one of the singles from this album. And I listened to this song, and this is the first time hearing them. And everyone's like, what? You don't know the Zolas? They're so Vancouver, blah, blah, blah. And so I was listening to them, and then they released this album, and it was really great. They wrote a song with Carly Rae Jepsen on her new album, Emotion.
Oh, what song?
I'm trying to think which one it is. I loved that album, but I'm trying to think of which. I'll have to look it up. They wrote L.A. Hallucinations.
Oh, that's such a good one.
I mean, like, literally every single one on there is a good one, though. But, yeah.
Oh, no. For sure. Great album. But, no, the Zolas are really great. They're Spooner, I think they're self-titled. They have a self-titled album, which I really, really enjoyed. And then I listened to that, and then sorry, I'm just talking about this album. This is my first podcast. I'm kind of nervous.
it's fine.
But
no one was.
You're doing great.
Okay, thank you, guys. But anyway, Spooner, okay. It's like an entire journey in an album. Like, I barely ever like albums like this because it's super, super poppy. There's like a lot of synth and like a lot of pop and a lot of like happiness. And when I was first listening to it, I was a little bit overwhelmed and I was like, okay, there's so many, like, it's just so jumpy and happy. Like, you can't listen to it and like stare out the window and be like, oh, you know, like, it's nothing that really makes you, if you're going to listen to it, it has to be in the car on a sunny day. But when you do listen to it in the car on a sunny day, then it's really great. But yeah, no, it's a great album. There's a song called Swooner off of Swooner, and I think it's number 2 in Canada right now. So that's a big deal, but it hasn't made it to the U.S. Huh?
On like the alt charts?
No, just overall.
Overall, the number 2 is, wow, I'll have to
give it a listen. Yeah, it's in the top 10. It's really great. It's a really great album. The album cover was taken in one of my favorite parks in Vancouver that I used to go to when I was little all the time. And I went the other day and I held up the album cover.
What's it
called? The album?
No,
the park. Or the park. It's called Queen Elizabeth Park.
Oh, never mind.
Sorry. But no, yeah, it's a really... They have... the lead singer actually has a recording studio and a Vancouver-based song... artists like Hey Ocean, if you guys know who that is, and Said the Whale, they record there a lot too, so it's pretty cool. Yeah, great band, great album. Wish more people outside of Canada knew them, but
true, yeah. MF Canada hours.
Yeah, for real, true maple syrup hours. Smash that like if you being polite.
Smash that Tim Hortons button.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's a great album. Listen to it if you have the time.
I like the way you say that. You're not like, you should really listen. Just like, if you have a moment, you know, just consider maybe trying it out if you really feel like it.
No, it's awesome.
Okay, so back to me now, because I need to always be talking. I'm like a shark, and then if I stop swimming, I die. Or if I stop talking, I die. So the second album I want to talk about is David Bowie's Black Star, and we would definitely be incredibly... remiss if we did not talk about this album. It's a masterpiece, one of the defining albums of 2016, and the final album of an amazing artist.
The goat.
Yes.
The goat, not a goat.
It's hard to talk about this album without talking about the circumstances surrounding it. But even, I remember in like the first 3 days before he passed, like everyone was still raving about it. It was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I'm so excited to see what David Bowie's going to do next. Like everyone was just going crazy for it. And just really, really enjoying it. So,
the thing is, it was like before he died, it was a fantastic album. This is one of those rare albums where, like, you can't take, like, the context added to the album. Like, did any of you listen to it the day he died?
Of course. I think...
It fucked me up. I mean, just, like, something happened the day he died. That fucked me up, man.
Yeah. No, it was,
Because the thing is, like, he did write from a perspective of a dying man.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
This album is essentially about his, like, impending peril, doom. Death, and he just takes up. I mean, yeah, like things, and like he comes from a place of almost fear, like now that like thing is, like, the lyrics are very abstract when you listen to it before. It's like, what the fuck is he talking about? But then, like, you hear it, you hear that he died, and you're like, oh shit, all of this makes sense now. Like, Lazarus.
Yeah.
It's kind of like mourning his, like, lifestyle almost.
What I think is amazing about this album, besides everything else amazing about it, is that it combines, like, so many different eras of his music. Like, I think the previous album, The Next Day, which I thought was great, and a lot of people kind of overlook, kind of, like, was that. But this feels even more that by incorporating a lot more of the Berlin era, the more experimental side of his material, but also keeping in the, like, super groovy, just great tune side of his Ziggy Stardust phase, or his Scary Monsters and Super Creeps. Is that the album Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, or is that just the song? Is it just Scary Monsters?
Scary Monsters is the album.
Okay, yeah. Combining, like, all his dancier, more upbeat music with his more experimental music, and I think that's incredible.
Right. And something also, like, we have to give a shout out to is, like, the Donnie McCaslin band that he worked on this album with. Yeah,
they did an amazing job.
The thing is that, like, Bowie's a great artist, but this age, I mean, I feel like you have to work with people. He had to work with people to get this result. And the collaboration yielded fantastic results. And, I mean, it was a great album. And... there's not a lot to say about it, so that's just a fantastic album.
Not even the best David Bowie album of 2016, though. Everyone knows that Ziggy Stardust is the best David Bowie album to come out in 2016. There were a lot of David Bowie albums that came out in 2016, but I think Ziggy Stardust is the best one.
Are you making a joke about the reissues?
I'm making a joke about the fact that, like, no one listened to David Bowie before he died.
Oh. I got it. There you go. Uh-huh. I mean, I've been a huge David Bowie fan for years.
I mean, yeah, but, like, the joke was that...
Yes, I get it now.
It's also the... Yeah, okay.
Okay, I'm back.
Right, it's just like how Purple Rain didn't exist until, like...
Yeah, I'll admit to...
May when it went on Spotify.
It's still not on Spotify.
Is it not on Spotify?
No, I had to download it.
Exclusive prints.
Fucking nerds. Dude, I bought that as a gift for someone who I now don't like, and it was $5. And I, like, really regret that investment now that I, like, gave that away. Hi, dog. Yeah.
Okay, I'll go on now. So, my next song I'm going to talk about is...
Jesus.
Okay, The Life of Pablo by the one and only Mr. Kanye West. And this has to be, I mean, like, in terms of just, like, context and everything, besides maybe Black Star, it has to be, like, the most definitive album of 2016. Just the way that he's dominated the cultural zeitgeist. I mean, it is the messiest album world of all time. Like, he beat Death Grips their own shit here. And I just remember that entire week, like, after he kept on fucking changing the day, after the Wiz Khalifa Twitter beef... He kept on fucking changing the date. Actually, he never did change the date, but after he kept on changing the damn track list, had all the names on it. Then after the disastrous premiere event, Easy Season 3 at Madison Square Garden, like, it was just fucking weird. It was not executed well, and, like, in that setting, the album did not sound good. And then he kept on sending out those problematic tweets all week. And, like, I'd had it.
It was legendary.
Bill Cosby,
we all,
innocent.
We all knew
Pablo Bill Cosby, was innocent.
Pablo was gonna be the goat.
Every tweet he sent was like a dagger to my heart. It's like, please, Kanye, stop, please. I tweeted out, like, the cover of Trouble Will Find Me, because that's how I felt. That lady just, like, laying there dead. That's how I felt. Like, Kanye kept doing that. I got to go tell him to take a bath. Because it was all like, Kanye, please. So, and then even like the. Even, like, the SNL performance, like, an hour before he debuted it, was not good. But basically, it was almost kind of like, then finally the album dropped.
And, like, it didn't really drop, even. It just kind of...
It was kind of dropped on, like, its title, but then, like, you're supposed to be able to buy it, but you couldn't buy it, but it was streaming, but everyone pirating. It was fucking mad. The thing is, but then I a buzzer beater three at the half court shot against all odds. He pulled it off. And a lot of people disagree about the quality of the album.
I'm one of them.
You don't like it?
I think it's what?
I don't give a fuck.
I think there are some good songs on it, but I think there's some really bad songs.
Ethan, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's kind of a messy album, but I love the way it comes together. Like,
I thought Yeezus was a messy album, but I liked it a lot more.
Yeezus is a pretty cohesive album.
But it's cohesive in its incohesiveness.
Yeah, exactly.
Like from song to song, it almost feels like a sound collage. Almost.
It's just kind of apeshit crazy. And you don't really think that it has any rhyme or reason the first, like, 10 times you listen to it. And you realize that the transition from Famous to Feedback is just flames. And the transition from Feedback to Freestyle 4 makes your ears fall off. And those were the three songs you thought, like, didn't go together well. And you realize that it's actually the fucking best album. Also, Real Friends is the best song of all time. I think we can all agree on that.
Literally. Actually, I don't know. I think I fuck heavy with Wolves.
I mean, like, Wolves CDQ is the name of AJ's child. So.
Oh, yeah, first. But the live version of Wolves was so much better
than the recorded version.
They updated the recorded version.
Yeah,
I know, but it's still not as good as the live copy, the live one.
Yeah, I just agree.
Okay, Mr. Contrarian.
The updated
version. My opinion.
Obviously. Version 2.0, the original version of Wolves recorded was kind of whack.
I think the second one made the new version.
Oh no! Because it has Vic Mensa and Sia. They fucking murder it.
Yeah, Vic Mensa is the best.
And it's just things like for a long time, we thought that was going to be the opening track. Now it's fucking exciting because like that song's so dark and brooding. I'm like, dude, that's a fucking opener right there. But then I heard Ultralight Beam. It's like, well, just fuck me up. Jeremiah, do one of your things.
What do you want me to do?
One of those like kill me things.
Holy fucking shit. Literally fucking grind me up into Jojen paste and then feed me to Bran Stark to unlock his green seeing powers. Like, that's how Ultralight Beam makes me feel. Okay. When that lady comes in to sing the bridge.
Like, when I hear it, I always feel like I'm on an Ultralight Beam, you know?
Yeah, when that lady comes in to sing the bridge, that's the part that fucks me up the most. Like, that's the part that, like, low-key, after 20 listens, that's the one that really messes you up. Because Chance's verse is obviously just the flames, but that part when she's like, whew, oh, man.
And then Kirk Franklin's prayer.
Yo, the SNL performance when he just walked out.
Yeah, dude, then fucking Father Stretch My Hands. Things like this.
Oh, my God.
Like, you can, like, if you want to dislike this album, you can. There's a lot of reasons to not like it. But this has so many fucking incredible moments on it.
The best part is that, like, the two songs that are considered the worst, which I guess are Facts and Fade, are technically bonus tracks. So they don't even count.
I actually like Facts a lot.
The new Facts is a banger.
Also, when you heard the old Facts, the original Facts, it was fucking awful.
The original Facts, the one on SoundCloud was awful, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, though. But then I heard things, like, that was probably the best first listening experience of the year, just hearing that album. Things like when you hear it with the new beat, like that trap banger beat, I was fucking up and dancing. I was like, this dude Kanye, he did it. Like, he just fucking pulled it all together.
This up and comer Kanye.
And he made Designer into a star. Like, thing is, Designer has the hottest track of 2016.
He got an Andre 3K feature and didn't even like use it. Like, come on.
Dude,
the balls that takes is.
I mean, and like the way he just uses all his features, voices almost like instruments rather than like voices. It's just, I don't know. I mean, it's not one of Kanye's best albums.
It's gonna be looked on in like 5 years. It's actually a pretty big album. Because I think it's actually like kind of saying something about the way hip hop is going. It's not as like.
No, this album is as far as like the album format.
It's not as ahead of its time as like some of his other albums are, because like we have Future and all of them running around with their auto tune and their trap beats. But like, I think this album is really, I think this album is everything that Views wanted to be, and is a good album.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I just part of me is the Connie, and like that's part of the reason why I overlooked the lyrics. But even then, like some of them are objectively bad. But like, for example, the Taylor Swift line. Totally Yo, uncalled Swift for.
Line is flames.
Dude, totally uncalled for. Kind of fucked so up. Awful. It's not even that good of a lyric.
Oh, it's so bad.
But I love that Kanye, just like the fact that Kanye said it is and hilarious.
The model line is high key, my favorite.
Yeah, it's that's another awful, awful
if I
line.
Fuck this model.
But he said that he put it on his record, and I fucking love that. Like, oh my god.
I'ma feel like an asshole. Like who doesn't enjoy saying that?
Like, yes, it's an objective.
After that album came out, that was like all I said.
Your mom, just talking to your mom.
So. Yeah, I would like quote it in conversations all the time. And then my sweet mate started to like sing it with me. Like I would say the first line and then one of them would like say it back to me. It became like a call and response.
If that song were like both parts were just one track, that'd be my song to be.
Well, they kind of are. Well, that's the reason why he split it up, dude. He needed to make sure it was fair. Because if those were the same song, that would be fucking bonkers.
That'd be the best song of all time.
Yeah, exactly. And like Kanye knows that he can't do
Desire,
that.
Oh my, it's just like the way he, I think I can't listen to Panda because like the way he uses that song in Father Stretch My Hands.
Oh yeah, Panda's fucking awful.
It's an okay song. But like compared to Father Stretch My Hands, the build up to it.
Because without those Kanye ad-libs, like what are you doing?
I got Bronx in it then. My god, just fuck me up, man. Like that, I mean, that album is most exciting. Like it could fall apart at any moment, and it kind of does fall apart, but it's so fucking exciting.
Get the fucking all right. Hold on. Best part of the album though is when Waves comes in and he's like, "Step up in this bitch, like," and you just start like,
"I'm the one, yo, bitch, like."
You get fucked up, feel good. Although the only thing I have about Waves is I think Waves would be better if it was Miguel on the hook instead of Chris Ocean.
It's true that Chris Brown
like needed it because he's an asshole, but like damn, just imagine that silky sweet Miguel on it.
Then fucking The Weeknd.
Ooh, that Weeknd feature is great.
He's like low key my favorite male voice in pop music. Like he's an awful lyricist and not in the cool way like Kanye. But he has like just like his Michael Jackson voice. I fucking love it. And then that breakdown at the end of FML. Woo!
Okay, we should probably move on.
I could go on, like I could just like break down song by song and give you one moment that just makes me.
Yes, it is Jeremiah's turn now.
let's keep it in line with the whole Kanye gospel shit. We're talking about Coloring Book by Chance the Rapper, which is one of my favorite releases of the year. Definitely one that I've probably listened to the most the past. Like 2 months because I haven't really listened to any new music other than it. But yeah, this mixtape is the banger, even though it's really not a mixtape. And that is something that kind of goes against it because it does have a song called Mixtape, which is about it being a mixtape, and it being free, but it's kind of neither of those things. But that's not the point. The point is that Chance, after a nice 3-year break from acid rap, dropped a really fantastic mixtape, which is the most logical progression of his sound, I think, which fully embraces the gospel that Kanye said he was going to embrace on Pablo, but he didn't actually like embrace it on Pablo. And I mean, I think this is one of the most unique sounding records of the year. Like, I don't think we're going to hear anything for a while that sounds quite like this. And it's one of the best sounding by far. Whether or not you like all the production aspect, like all the production choices he makes, like this album is mixed and like produced and mastered so impeccably well. And it was actually really funny because one of the big criticisms from people when it first came out was that it was mixed horribly. But it's because they were downloading like a 100 kilobyte per second version off of DatPiff, and that tends to happen. But anyways, it's really colorful, as the name suggests. It's really bright. It's really vibrant. It bangs. But as you like go deeper, you realize that there's got a lot of melancholy to it. Summer Friends is just, woo, fuck me up. And then fucking Same Drugs has been just like, that's just the murder song. That's the song that comes on and you're just like, damn, dog, eat my hand. And you just get fucked up real good. That part, like at the end, oh my god. Oh my, I admit, it did take me like 15 listens to realize that the song wasn't like a positive song, because I assumed that it was about him and his baby mama. Like, they're so overwhelmed by the fact that they're growing up and that they have a baby that they can't do the same drugs that they used to. So now they only smoke weed. That's what I thought it was about. And then then my brother was like, yeah, you know, of course he uses drugs as a metaphor to, like, talk about, you know, growing apart when you grow older. And I was like, oh, shit. I thought that was about not doing hard drugs. And so, yeah, that's my anecdote. The album bangs. The only thing that I don't like about it is that I learned that How Great, the intro to How Great, is longer than all of All Night, which is a problem, because All Night is a banger, and the first part of How Great is not quite a banger, because it goes on for like 3 minutes. But I mean, yeah, Coloring Book's great. Chance goes in a lot. The features are fantastic. J Biebs comes through on Juke Jam, which is like
Ugati-Biebs.
Song of Summer. Dog, who else goes in? Ooh, Blessings Part 2, though, is low-key the best song in the album. Holy shit. What Anderson .Paak is like, oh, Lord, at the end, you're like, god damn. Anyways, bars on bars. What's the best bar on the album? There's a lot of great bars on the album. I can't think of any off the top of my head. No Thoughts is a banger. They're all bangers. Every song's a banger. The production is impeccable. Angels is the Jammerino. It's just a great album. It's just a great, great fucking thing. And the sub seems to have rallied against it. So I felt like I needed to champion it. So yeah, that's what I got to say about Coloring Book. I don't know if I like it more than Acid Rap, but I mean, it's still the fucking Jammerino. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Anybody else have anything
to
say?
Oh.
Okay.
All right. We'll move on to Lizzie.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Santi Gold's 99 Cents, which was, I never really listened to Santi Gold until this album. I knew her feature off of, she was on Hell on the Long Live ASAP album by ASAP Rocky. And I remember listening to that and I was like, wow, what a great voice. And I decided to check out her new album when it came out. And wow, this album is fantastic. It was produced by Rostam from Vampire Weekend.
He's a fantastic producer.
No, yeah, of course, which just makes it right, which just makes it with sort of like a cool little Vampire Weekend influence, and you can definitely hear that in it because it's just great. The album cover is featuring, it has her marketed as sort of a Barbie or as sort of a doll. She's encased in plastic and there's things around her and it says 99 cents on the cover. And the album basically plays into, talks about how things can be completely shallow. Her lyrics, she talks about how things can be shallow, but the thing is that she's completely okay with it. And it's just so weird because most of her lyrics are pretty dark and make you think a lot about like materialism and corporate greed. But everything is just so poppy and happy that you can't help but be like, okay, I'm enjoying this. You know, like this is a bop, but she's like talking about capitalism and everything I hate. But
2016 capitalism.
Right? No, for real. Pitchfork described it as like the soundtrack to a military invasion by a chorus of anime schoolgirls. And I thought that was extremely accurate.
Is that your aesthetic?
Basically, that is my aesthetic. it's a great album. It has a lot. It shows me that she can do any genre. You know, she does, it's very poppy, but it's also, it makes you feel like, it's poppy and synthy and fun, but it also makes you think. And I think that's really important in an album if it starts to make me think, you know. If I'll be listening to it, a lyric, and I'll be like, wait a second, like, this isn't, you know. But no, it's great. She has a song that was actually her single. It's Who Be Lovin' Me, which was feat. I Love McConan, and which was kind of a weird feature that I thought at first, but it's one of my favorite songs off the album because they balance each other out perfectly. And it's a great album. I'd listen to it again many times. I have listened to it a lot. But it's really great. It's her second album. It's great.
I haven't listened to either of your albums you've talked about so far, but I'll definitely check out one or both of them.
Yeah, definitely do it. She's great. Yeah. Good albums.
All right, the last album I want to talk about is the Never Ending Get Down. Okay, so the reason I want to talk about this is not because it's one of my favorite albums, but because it's a lesser known artist that needs to be heard more because they are incredible. I don't enjoy this album as much as their, I think it was 2014 album, Full of Snakes. But this album is a lot more intricate and interesting and different than their first album was pretty like cut and paste 90s rock in a lot of ways, but really, really good interpretation of that, kind of like how Yuck did it a few with their debut album. Like, it's a very 90s rock album, but that doesn't mean isn't an amazing album. And this album, they kind of get a more defined sound, go in their own direction. And I'm not sure if I love that direction as much as I did on their previous album, but I think after more and more listens to this album, I'm going to enjoy it more and more and enjoy it as much as I do Full of Snakes. Because it is still very, very good guitar-driven rock. The vocals are a bit lower in the mix on this album, which is really interesting because they were such a prominent part of the Full of Snakes. But again, another stylistic choice that they're kind of using to differentiate themselves from their debut and the 90s. I don't have a huge amount to say about this album because I've only listened to it a couple times, but if you like guitar-driven rock, I definitely check it out. If of all the albums we talked about on the podcast today that it reminds me of, it definitely reminds me of a Car Seat Headrest album in that it's very... it's just a good rock album. That you're not, and there's fewer and fewer of those these days. So when you find a good one, you should definitely check it out. I don't have a huge amount to say on this though, but just to check otherwise, besides check it out and check out their debut album, Full of Snakes. And I think they're on tour right now. So if they're coming around, you see them because they are amazing live. I saw them in a apartment 2 years ago, I want to say, and it was a blast, and the cops almost came, and people started running out, but it was a fun show otherwise. So yeah, Will, what's your third album?
So yeah, of the two albums I talked about, and the one I'm about to talk about, they're all pretty much an immortal deadlock tie for my album of the year, but today, like, they change every day of the week, but today, on this particular day, on Thursday, June 30th, my favorite album of the year so far is Goodness by The Hotelier. And has anyone here listened to this album?
I have once.
Once. Jeremiah, have you?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I listened to three songs off of it.
Anyways. Yeah, this album, I mean, Ian Cohen core. Emo Revival. Yeah, this emo revival to me is definitely one of, if not the most interesting scene in rock music today. Lots of great guitar bands coming out right now, doing somewhat original stuff. And The Hotelier is maybe the most original and interesting band to me. Like, Christian Holden, just a very serious, like, anyone else read that, the Stereo Gum, like, profile on them when they streamed their album?
No, I think I might have skimmed it or something, but...
It's long, but the point is that, like, he's kind of, like, he's a very serious guy. Like, he's, an anarchist, he's a vegetarian, and he's straight edge, and he's just... I mean, like, he doesn't have a huge sense of humor. And his album is... pretentious is definitely a word I'd use to describe it, but... I think that's what makes it so fucking good. I think it's like, you can tell that he had every note written in his head before they even walked into a studio. And it's one of those kind of albums. And it's the only album this year I heard. It's definitely the most cohesive. Like, where I criticize Car Seat Headrest for not being cohesive enough. This is a holistic album, one experience. And throughout, it's just... It's like the frizzing, the emotional catharticism throughout, then it just builds and builds. And then by the time End of Real comes, just fuck me up, Desu. And I'm trying to think. My thoughts aren't collected for this one, but the point is that it's really fucking goodness.
It's a good. I agree with that.
Nice meme at the end. I liked that.
Oh, but yeah, I know. I mean, definitely the most cohesive and holistic piece. And it's definitely pretentious, but it's pretentious in a way that I think really works in its advantage. And a lot of cool motifs running through it, musically speaking.
So let's move.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Fucking actually, no, shit.
Actually, let's do Lizzie first.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Bottomless Pit by Death Grips. Okay, so I feel like with Death Grips, you either love Death Grips or you hate Death Grips. There's no in between, right? And I felt like Bottomless Pit was definitely an album that really either made you feel something or you were just kind of like, oh, it's just noise. At least what I've discussed with my peers, you know, my friends that like Death Grips. So the thing is that when I was talking to one of my friends about it, I was like, oh yeah, Bottomless Pit came out. How do you like it? And he was like, oh, you know, it was good. But like, Death Grips doesn't give a fuck about their audience. And I was like, well, but you see, that's kind of like what I love about this album is that they don't give a fuck about their audience. They just want to jam. They just want to do what they do best, which is making weird fucking awesome noises that everybody loves. Sorry, I get really passionate. That
everybody loves. So basically we had Maddie on this week, even though he wasn't on.
Well, but Death Grips is just, Bottomless Pit was great. Usually, I really like how they had the first track was giving bad people good ideas, or giving good people bad ideas. It's giving bad people good ideas.
Giving good people bad ideas.
Thank you.
Giving bad people good ideas.
Perfect. And that was featuring the lead singer from Cherry Glazer, which is another one of my favorite bands. So seeing those two collide, which I never even knew that they knew each other, you know, was a big deal for me. And I remember just from hearing that, I was like, I'm going to love this album. I think that with The Powers That Be and with a lot of their other release stuff, it started to get a little, Death Grips started to get like a little more tame and a little more like, you know, okay, this is catchy, you know, with the guitar riffs and everything, but it made you think like, I want to listen to Death Grips and I want to be like, what the fuck, you know? And I think Bottomless Pit really did that for me. I thought it was a great album. Like, even with the album cover, you were like, what? And I think that's what they do best, is making people have that reaction, that awesome, you know, like, wow, this is so good. Why do I like this? This is just my personal opinion, you know, a lot of people. But yeah, no, it's a great album, Bottomless Pit. I think my favorite song is probably Houdini, because of the lyrics are just ridiculous. And at one point he's like, fuck, is that a hairstyle? And he's like, oh, shit, something about Pussy Church. I don't know, but sometimes I hear it in my head and I'm just like, I'm pretty nervous right now, so I couldn't recall it. But it's like, sometimes I hear it in my head and I'm just like, nice, like, fuck, is that a hairstyle? And I'll like, it was a great album. 10 out of 10, listen to it. Well, probably like 8.5 out of 10, but definitely listen to it.
I never actually listened to it, even though I'm a big Death Grips fan. I don't know, it's just like, there was so much hype for Jenny Death and Powers That Be and all that. And then it's like, okay. And then they're like, oh yeah, Bottomless Pit is coming out. It was kind of this weird thing, like, I can't gave all my fucks about Death Grips during Jenny Death when. And
right.
So I don't know. I liked what I heard of the album. I think I've listened to most of it. I just don't think I've listened to the whole thing. Death Grips are in a kind of weird point where they, like, everyone was so excited about Jenny Death and people are excited. We're excited for Bottomless Pit and are excited for something they're coming out with. I think they're coming out with something new. I think there's something on the horizon. I don't know.
They're definitely, I think they have a project in the works, but I'm not sure.
It's just, they're in a weird period. Like, they're still making very compelling music and very challenging music, obviously.
Right.
But they're definitely, I don't know. I don't know if they've.
I'm kind of with you. Like, I think I've listened to this album a good few times. But, yeah, like, things that you said that this was kind of like after Jenny Death, you're kind of getting bored with them or they're kind of getting stale. I'm kind of the opposite with you. Like, Jenny Death, like and then just the powers of being in general was kind of like the peak of their excitement for me.
Right.
The Bottomless Pit is kind of like the point for me. Like, I don't want to like shit over this album, but like, I actually like the album, but for me, this is the point where it feels like this is the not necessarily least essential, but.
Yeah, no, don't worry about hurting my feelings.
I feel like this is the point where it's like, it's not as scary anymore, almost.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like
the point. It's just like things like you listen to Love Deep Web, and it's like you're legitimately like scared the entire time. Like, you feel like your mom's gonna walk in at any moment. like what the fuck is this shit?
I think part of the reason I love Death Grips so much was that like, is this the last Death Grips release we're gonna get? Is this gonna be it? Is this like kind of with every album in a way, or not? Or like, what is gonna happen next? But now that we have a good amount of Death Grips albums, like, I don't know, how many are there? I've lost, like, 7?
Yeah, there's gotta be, seven.
If you count Ex-Military, it's like...
Yeah, I count Ex-Military.
I count Ex-Military, yeah, of course.
It's the 6th album.
It's kind of like, they've reached the point where they've released a lot of material, and I wouldn't, like, enough material that I feel like I could keep revisiting it and like experiencing new things. So I think that's why, like, there's enough material for me to be like, okay, I could be surprised by this eventually again.
That surprised me, I guess. That's my problem. Nothing about it shocked me. Nothing about it like.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, wait, Jenny Death. I'm like, oh my God, this is so hyped. It's going to be crazy. And it was very good. Like, empowered.
It was crazy. For me, like Jenny Death is crazy.
Yeah, but
it's fucking this album is insane too. But it's just it's the same insane.
It's the same insane, which I don't, but not in a like repetitive way. It's just like, this is what Death Grip does, and it's great all the time. But like, what's next? And I think they're gonna do something even.
This sounds
more...
like a transition. Okay, basically, this sounds like a transitional album to me.
Yeah,
like,
this
has been between Death Grips 2.0.
It's very good. Don't get me wrong. From what I've heard of it, but it's not, it's my least, like, the Death Grips album I'm least familiar with, and not just because it's the most recent one.
Right, yeah.
But I'm glad that you liked it. I don't know.
It has some good songs on it, like, giving bad people good ideas.
Hothead was a great single.
Like,
Hothead's amazing.
I think it's like moments they go into fucking overdrive on this album are the best moments.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what really
the got track, the very end. They just fucking go off.
Okay.
Right.
I think it's time for Jeremiah. If he has
it. Is it time for Psychopomp?
I think we're going to have a special cameo here too.
Okay. So.
Oh my God, that hurts my ears.
For those of you unfamiliar with the album Psychopomp by Japanese Breakfast, this is the, like, unconditional, just, like, absolutely the only album of the year. Like, holy shit. Okay, so this album is the debut album of Japanese Breakfast, which is the project of Michelle Zoner. She's in the emo band Little Big League. She recorded this album, or she wrote most of this album when she was off tending to her mother who was dying from cancer. In hospice care, so there's a lot of really visceral emotion in it, and it's 25 minutes long, and it's this great fusion of like dream pop and indie rock and fucking emo. And okay, so this album is really just like the most absolutely fuck my shit up album of all fucking time. Like, fuck my shit up, fuck my shit up.
Oh, hi,
fuck
AJ.
My shit up. Just like, welcome, Jesus, dude.
Welcome on the podcast. Woo! AJ.
This album is so good that I have materialized out of thin air, teleported into these airwaves so I could talk about it.
God damn, you right, dude.
The power of this album is so strong.
Let's just go. Do you want to just do like a track by track? Like, fuck me.
Do you want to just do a track by track?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we're gonna start. Okay.
I've lost control of this podcast.
Like the first song. The first song is called "In Heaven."
Fuck me up. The first song is called "In Heaven." It should be called "Heaven" because, like, it's the intro to this song. It's this album, and it's the best fucking thing you've ever heard in your entire life. It's so good.
Jesus.
It's so good. Oh, this album. So
fucking good. And there's that part when she's like,
"Oh my god." Oh my god, Jesus.
And that has been just the Indieheads podcast this week.
And then hold on.
I hope you've been
hold on.
You've enjoyed.
But it's also like,
please like us on
Facebook.
Like,
okay, hold on.
Please like us on Twitter. On. What AJ?
Then it transitions.
So in heaven
fucking
is like, no. I'm not done with. Oh no. In heaven's like, man, you're like, this song's a jam. Like the first like
goodbye,
minute or so,
everyone.
Like, this is a jam.
Hope you have a great week.
And then you're like, you go, this is a jam, and then you go, wait a minute, no, this is something else. Like, this is getting me to the core.
I'm actually
fucking
gonna cut
me
this.
Up.
It's gonna be a joke. So,
absolutely not.
Ethan, let them do the damn thing, Ethan.
And then you're like, okay, so In Heaven fucked me up, all right? But you're like, okay, so the intro songs usually fuck you up. That's like a thing that happens. Fair enough. You know, let's see what happens next. And then fucking The Woman Who Loves You comes on. And this is like a short little song.
Jeremiah, what are you doing with your mic?
My mic just fell off my face. That's all. So keep in mind that this album is quite short. And this song is really short, but it is pop perfection. And it is just like, there's that moment.
Perfect.
There's like a, oh my god, I love it. And then fucking, here, hold on though.
Oh.
Oh, Rugged Country.
Rugged Country,
oh,
baby. Let's go. Got those drums, you got everything on this fucking song. Jesus Christ.
Oh my god.
And
oh
then
my
I'm
god. And like so emo. It's emo as shit. And she just goes
it's
in.
Definitely the most she just goes in. It's definitely the most emo on this thing. And like, huh, Jesus Christ. Like Rugged Country. Woo! Woo boy.
God damn.
But and you're like, so you're three songs in at this point. You go, this album can't get any better. And what comes next? Literally, Everybody Wants to Love You, which is just like super fun, super glitzy, super
like high key the pop song of the year.
High key
the best pop song of the year.
High key the best pop song of the year, and you're just
and
like, this is
like,
a ride.
Can I get your number?
Oh,
can I get you into bed?
It's like snappable.
Wake up in the morning. Will you
give
me
a lot.
And then you're like, God damn, dude.
Then, oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. And then you get the title track, which is like the interlude. The first couple times I was like, these interludes are kind of like whatever. But then it all clicked, and I was like, holy shit. How could you possibly be like, yeah, I'm going to skip this interlude? Whoo! It's like, okay, it's like a break.
Mom comes in at the end and says something unintelligible, and you're like, damn. Her mom just
like,
died.
Don't cry, whatever, the yada, yada, yada. Like, this album's such a fucking ride. That like the first four songs are so energy, you get like a minute breather. The album's like less than half an hour long, but you like need this minute breather of just like ambient noise because you're like, oh my god, this is taking me places. Like I need that. You need that minute off when you listen to this album.
Mm.
Because then you get into Jane Come, which is just like,
fuck,
the most aggressive, but like, it's like the most downplayed aggression I've ever heard in like a song. And she's just like going in on some dude, and it's just all about like it's high key like sexuality anthem of the year. It's just like holy fuck me this song, Jane Come, my man. The music video is fucking awesome that they just released. Woo!
There's witches.
High key,
it's pretty sick.
There's witches and shit. It's pretty cool. Heft, literally the fuck me up
holy
song of the year.
Shit,
is just if Heft doesn't destroy you like a wave of emotion washing
oh
over
God.
Your body, you don't have a soul at this point. You're not a human being.
Yeah. Like, you're right.
Then you get another breather, Moon on the Bath, which you need because you were just destroyed.
And it's
on
also,
every
it's
level.
Also just this gorgeous, like, War on Drugs style, like, chill out. You're like, all right, we're chilling. All right, surely she can't fuck me up one more time.
You're like, this album, like, okay, you're like, there's one song left. Like, this has been a rough ride. My emotions could not handle, like, if this album was any longer. And then, oh, what's the closing song? Oh, just 777.
Holy shit. Like, this is the song of the year. Like,
oh
we
my
say
God.
That every song in this album is song of the year, but the fact that it all leads up to 777 is what makes it the song of the year.
This album's like one big piece of music, and in my opinion, it's infinitely listenable. I think I've honestly listened to this album at least once every single day since it released. Usually more. I would say like
25 minutes long.
Like this came out in.
You can easily listen.
On like February. This came out in February.
No, April. It's like April 1st. Yeah.
That seems.
Whatever. It's already important in my life that I don't care. Yeah, I've listened to this album probably like 20 to 30 times.
And normally with short albums like this, you know, expect it. You know, it's like, okay, whatever, it's short. Like, I'm going to listen to it. It's just going to be background music. But this thing grabs your attention. It doesn't even feel like it's 25 minutes. It's so perfect. The perfect length.
It is infinitely listenable. And
she could have put, like, she wrote, like, a song every day when she was taking care of her dying mom. But she's honed it down to 7. And that's how you know this shit is fucking goddamn.
And it packs the same punch. Like every single, like, you know, a lot of emotional albums, once you familiarize yourself with them, it's sort of like, okay, like that album is tied to this time and place and this emotion. And like, I'll revisit it when I'm feeling these things, or like, it's going to bring up these emotions. Psychopomp straight up is just like every single time. It's just like a journey from start to finish.
I'll concede. It's only been out for 3 months.
Doesn't matter. It's
you can't say that it's never going to like for me, like In the Airplane OC is one of my favorite albums of all time, but the emotion eventually wore off.
But like,
it took a lot longer than 3 months for the emotion to wear off.
It's still there.
This is still the banger at the end of the day.
It's absolutely still there. You know, and even in Airplane OC, it's got that. Honestly, this album is probably as emotionally like resonant as Airplane, in my opinion. It's
her voice is so emotive and like,
okay, like, we need to talk about her
line
voice.
When she's like
the vocal
in Heft when she says "spent my nights by hospital beds" and you just like oh my gosh,
yeah. So this album deals with like grief and anger and depression and all of it so well, and none of it is like accusatory or like self-pity. It's literally just like, I am presenting a palette of emotions, and if you're a human being, you will find something in these 25 minutes that you relate to and that will fuck you up to your core, likely more than one thing.
It's just gorgeous too, like, not to mention that the music is perfect.
Yeah, like, you don't even have to say that this album sounds good. It sounds so fucking good. Like, I don't think anyone could tell me, you cannot listen to Psychopomp and go, Psychopomp was bad. You can go, AJ and Jeremiah, you guys are fucking crazy. Why are you jerking this album so much? But you can't listen to this album and go, that was bad. It's fucking banger after banger after banger.
Also, album cover of the year. Like,
it's fucking up there.
By far.
And, oh my God.
So, and at this point, Psychopomp is in my top 5 of the decade. Like, easily. Like, that's
easily.
Not even a competition at this point.
Ugh. Psychopomp, my man.
Mm.
Like, I was like... For a while, I was like, I only recently came around and for a while, it was like, yeah, okay, Goodness, Teens of Denial, and Psychopomp are like my favorite albums of the year. I listened to them all so much, but then it just kept clicking, and I was like, I cannot stop fucking thinking about Psychopomp. I want to listen to Psychopomp every day for the rest of my life. If I could marry this album, I would.
Okay, on that note,
women are overrated.
On that note, I think we should end the podcast. If we ever are, if Maddie already decided not to cut when I said we're going to cut it. So
thank you, AJ, for coming on.
Yeah, we should end the podcast because we did just talk about the best album of the year.
It's true.
Like, how can the argument be made for anything else?
You guys have convinced me to listen to it. Like, I'm literally about to listen to it.
Oh my God, you have to.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. You're in for it.
Thank you for listening. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Symbol. Subscribe on YouTube, on iTunes, or whatever podcast
happy
thing.
Happy psychopomping, my friends. Happy psychopomping.
Bye, everyone.
Adios.
Bye, guys.